Yashodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Tira Vanacharya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Ananta Lila Pravishta Om Vishnu Pad Paramhansa Pari Bhajakacharya Astitera Sacha Shishima Shilabhai Charanarvinda Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Lila Pravishta Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribrajakacharya Astitera Sacha Shishima Shilabhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shilaharidas Thakur Ki Jai Premsakoho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Shishi Radha Krishna Gogopina Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Mathura Dhama Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhama Ki Jai Shri Tosi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhama Ki Jai Gita Nagari ki jai, Shishi Radha Damodar ki jai, Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Book Distribution ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakada Mayam Dadati Sapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschatya Desha Tarine Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangolangayate Girim Yat Kripastamaham Bande Shri Gurun Dinatarinam Panchakapatarubhyascha Kripashindu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.
Thank you so much. Very grateful to be here with you at Gita Nagari. Could you please move closer? Thank you so much. Gita Nagari is where Gauravani started school, so this is a very special place. And ever since I've been here this weekend, everyone is saying to me, oh, you're here and Gauravani's not here. And I'm just going, I'm sorry. I hope he comes soon.
I don't know. So I have an interesting topic. I
I think it's a very interesting thing that today is the full moon day. Guru Purnima, Radhanath Swami spoke so beautifully about Guru Purnima, the day for worshiping the Guru. Today, so many devotees received second initiation, Gayatri initiation tomorrow. So many dear devotees will receive first initiation. So this whole weekend to be blessed by the full moon, by the Guru Purnima, by Srila Sanatana Goswami, it's very inspiring, and I think it gives us many reasons for hope. So I was thinking we have the Chaitanya Chandradaya Mandir. It means the rising moon. Prabhupada asked, should we call it Chaitanya Chandra or Chaitanya Chandradaya? And everyone liked Chandradaya. So the moon is rising. Even the cows were very excited last night. I don't know if you heard, but some of the cows were dancing on the tents last night. So very tolerant tent dwellers. So Radhana Swami was our topic this weekend that we've been given is the mission of Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's movement past, present, and future. So Radhana Swami spoke so beautifully about the foundation, the community of love that we see, that we read, that we experience when we study Chaitanya Charitamrita. The example of Advaita Acharya, who was head of the whole Brahminical community, who was best friends and dearest associates with Haridas Thakur, who was a so-called untouchable. So what an example that is in our foundational pivotal literature. Role models of great humility and exemplary character. This is the foundation we've been given. Once I heard Gauravani, he was teaching the Panchatattva mantra to a group at a yoga studio, and he said, I'm going to teach you a very new mantra. It's only 500 years old. And then he taught them the Panchatattva mantra. So this tradition is very, very ancient, and from ancient times, prehistory really, and then revived by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago, and now coming down to us in the modern day. And then Sesha Prabhu spoke so beautifully. He really just zeroed in on the essence of the whole Krishna consciousness movement, the idea of being the servant of the servant of the servant. And this verse that he was quoting from, he had us repeat the last line of this verse, Naham vipra na cha narapati, napi vaisho na shudra. It says, I'm not a Brahmin. I'm not. So some of you taking Brahminical initiation, is this all right? Is it ringing? Some of you taking Brahminical initiation, but Lord Chaitanya is saying, well, I'm not a Brahmin, so I'm not a Shudra. I'm not a Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. What am I? I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, who is the maintainer of the beloved gopis. So this mantra is actually in the deity worship book. It's recommended that this mantra be chanted before we chant our Gayatri mantra to remind us of our real identity. So that's very powerful. So I love that Sesha Prabhu was talking about Prabhupada struggling alone on the Bowery. Of course, now the Bowery, you can rent a hotel for $700 a night on the Bowery. But at that time, we can't even imagine. You know, Prabhupada was walking, take his walks, and he'd be stepping over drunks on the street. Inconceivable. And Sesha so wonderfully pointing out how in 11 years, from that, struggling alone on the Bowery, having his typewriter stolen and all of these difficulties and sharing an apartment with a mad drug addict, all of these terrible things, and then within 11 years, he's riding on the Jagannath cart down Fifth Avenue, what he called the most important street in the most important city of the world. So, and I loved what he said. That, so how was that possible? Because Prabhupada gave up all designations. He wasn't thinking, I am a Brahmin. So he was able to touch the hearts of so many people because he was just thinking, I'm this your servant, I'm the servant of your servant's servant, and how can I serve you? And in this way, he touched the hearts of so many people. Actually, one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers in a so-called, he came to Prabhupada's Vyas Puja ceremony in Vrindavan, and it was a so-called homage to Srila Prabhupada, but this godbrother said, well, I was not successful when I went to England because I was not of the mentality to associate with so many low-class people. So just imagine, because he had some designation in his heart, he wasn't able to touch people's hearts the way Srila Prabhupada did. So coming along here, yes, this foundation, we have a foundation. Radhana Swami often talks about foundations, how they're the most important part of a building. You know, no one comes to your apartment and says, oh, I really like your foundation. But the foundation is what's holding everything up, right? It's the most intrinsic, most important part of the structure. So, but yet if we have a foundation, as you can see, we have a wonderful foundation that we've been given, such a deep and profound foundation. But if we don't now build on that foundation, the foundation can grow grass, right? Have you seen some of these buildings in Detroit? My husband's from Detroit. You see these pictures and, you know, they have these old buildings and now long grasses are growing in the foundations of these buildings. It's so sad. So we have to build on this wonderful foundation, how to make the Krishna consciousness movement successful. There's one scholar from Finland who wrote something about 10 years ago. He said that, it's very interesting, he said that the Krishna consciousness movement will be successful. This is an outsider writing about our society. He said the Krishna consciousness movement will be successful for two reasons. One, because if they always follow in the line of their acharyas, their teachers, in an authentic way, and number two, if they always have these ecstatic kirtan festivals, those two factors will make them successful. It's very interesting because some organizations have, you know, happy festivals and some of them have a body of knowledge, but we have both. But he was lacking also a deeper understanding of what that following in the line of our teachers really means. So Srila Prabhupada's purports, his Chaitanya Charitamrita, his Bhaktivedanta purports, which he called his emotional ecstasies, these are the keys to understanding this great science of Krishna consciousness. And actually, there are other versions of Chaitanya Charitamrita that are available. But from reading those versions of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we would get a very different picture, and we would not understand the secret mood of Lord Chaitanya and his associates that's hidden in the hearts. Radhana Swami, in his last two talks that he has given in the last couple days, he's quoted a verse several times, the last line of a verse, Mahajanayena Gatasapanta, which is a famous verse. Maybe some of you know that verse. But there are three lines that come before that last line. It's a very interesting verse. I love it so much. And it says something like this. It says that there's so many scriptures of the world, and their conclusions are sometimes different. Sages and holy people, sometimes they differ in their views of truth. So how does one know what's really true? And the verse says that the secrets of understanding the science of God, love of God, are hidden in the hearts of the pure devotees. Very beautiful. Hidden in the hearts of the pure devotees. So therefore, Mahajanayena Gatasapanta. Therefore, we must follow the path of the Mahajanas, the broad-minded, saintly people like Srila Prabhupada, like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. I was thinking of the story that's in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami talks about how he tells his own story. It's really beautiful. It's sort of like a little dip into his own autobiography where he talks about how he had faith in Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, but his brother only had faith in Lord Chaitanya, not Lord Nityananda. And so he was trying to preach to his brother and say, this is like a half a hen philosophy that you have faith in one but not the other. They're two brothers. But I was thinking that actually without the purports of Srila Prabhupada, without the teachings of Krishnadas Kaviraj as given through Srila Prabhupada, we might have had our doubts about Lord Nityananda also, right? Because he's really quite an eccentric personality. He did all kinds of wild stuff, right? He would sometimes be riding a crocodile. He would sometimes tear off his clothes and put them on his head. He was an adult grown man, living being, not man, right? And he was sometimes go to the house of Shivas Thakur and drink breast milk from his wife, who he considered his mother. I mean, he just did all these wild things. So we might also have our doubts. And there, So without, you understand my point, without hearing from the legacy of Srila Prabhupada, from the purport or the understanding emotional ecstasies of Srila Prabhupada, we also wouldn't understand. Radhana Swami told a very interesting story the other day. I hope he doesn't mind my quoting this. He usually doesn't like discussing the journey home in public gatherings, but this is sort of inside family. So he was saying that one of the early editors of the Journey Home wanted him to take out the story of Ghanashyam Baba. The story of Ghanashyam Baba, who was such a humble sadhu serving his deities. Maybe you remember the story, serving his deities so humbly. So this editor was saying, this man is eccentric. This story needs to be taken out. And so obviously, you know, she was a educated, articulate editor for some major publishing house, but she didn't have the understanding that comes from serving the lotus feet of the Mahajanas. And she wanted this story taken out. Just imagine, it's definitely probably my favorite story in the whole book and maybe the best story in the whole book. She wanted that taken out because she considered this man eccentric. You know, this Ghanashyam Baba who was, you know, he was showing Radhana Swami a radical love, a radical hospitality, such love and care. He was willing to starve. He was willing to freeze without his blanket. He was giving away his 3 rotis that he had. That's all he had to eat. He was giving them to Radhana Swami. Radhana Swami was saying, you say you have other rotis. Where are they? Show me. He says, no need. Anyways, it's such a beautiful story. And then he said to him, asked him, where are you from? And he said, I'm from America. He said, my Gopi Jana Ballabha has brought you all the way from America. You are his friend. I am just his servant. You know, just imagine the consciousness of such a person. So you understand my point. This woman, this outsider who hadn't understood the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, she considered this man eccentric. So if we look at the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll see that there are many such eccentric characters, right? Kalidas, the story of Kalidas and Jadu Thakur. So Kalidas was this high caste brahmana, but he was so humble of heart that he had this vow that he wanted to take the remnants of food of every single devotee in all of Bengal. So he would bring prasad, bring an offering, and then offer it to the devotees, and then he would hide outside and take their remnants, right? So once he went to the house of Jadu Thakur, who was a so-called untouchable, and he brought them some mangoes, and Jadu Thakur and his wife were saying, well, we'll send some ingredients to the house of a Brahmin, and they can cook for you so that you'll be honored properly as our guest, because they wouldn't have been acceptable for them to cook for him. And he said, no, that's not necessary. Please just accept these mangoes. That will please my heart. So then he gave them the mangoes, and he left, and he was hiding outside, and they ate the mangoes, and they sucked on the pits, and then they threw the mango pits and the skin outside in their rubbish heap. And he was waiting out there, and he just grabbed them when they weren't looking and, you know, sucking on their remnants. And in this way, he took the remnants of every devotee of Bengal. And as the story goes, Lord Chaitanya would not allow anyone to take the water that washed his feet, but only Kalidas was allowed to take the water that washed Lord Chaitanya's feet. And actually, Govinda, Lord Chaitanya's servant, was prohibited. Anyone who tried to take the water that washed Lord Chaitanya's feet as he entered the temple, he would wash his feet. Everyone was prohibited, but when Kalidas came, put his foot out, Lord Chaitanya just turned a blind eye. And then Kalidas did it again, and then he tried to do it again, and Lord Chaitanya said, all right, that's enough. You know? But so you could say, oh, this man was eccentric, right? Very eccentric. And what about Pundarik Vidyanidhi, right? Pundarik Vidyanidhi, so eccentric. Lord Chaitanya was just calling his name. He loved him so much. Let me read you a little something about him. His character was quite extraordinary. Just by hearing his name, the whole world is purified. But he dresses and looks just like a materialistic person in the midst of the accoutrements of the life of pleasure. No one is able to recognize him as a Vaishnava, yet he remains constantly merged in the deep ocean of devotion for Krishna. He never bathes in the Ganges because he is afraid to touch the holy waters with his feet, which would show disrespect. He only goes to take darshan of the Ganges at night and from a distance. He cannot bear to see people engaged in offensive behavior to the Ganges by gargling, cleaning their teeth, washing their hair in her waters, so he never goes there during the daytime. He never engages in worship of the deity without having taken a drink of Ganges water. He has homes in both Chittagong and Navadvip and will soon be arriving here. Because of his apparently materialistic behavior, this is Lord Chaitanya speaking, he says, you will not be able to recognize him, but I feel unwell because I am not able to see him. Then it continues a little bit later. It says, while Pundarik was living in Navadvip, Mukunda Dutt told Gadadhar one day that he wanted to introduce him to a great Vaishnava. Srila Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was a brahmachari from childhood and extremely detached from the senses and ascetic in his lifestyle. When he saw Pundarik sitting on comfortable cushions covered in sheets as white as the foam of milk and wearing very expensive clothes and perfumes, smoking from a hookah, and generally surrounded by all the trappings of a sensual lifestyle, he was unable to recognize him as a great sadhu. And so the story goes on. I won't continue the story, but maybe you know. So then Mukunda to show Gadadhar Pandit the caliber of the love of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he begins to chant a verse about Krishna's mercy to Putana. So, and then, you know, it's very poignant for me being here at Gita Nagari. Radhanath Swami, when he was here during the last days with Bhaktitirtha Swami, they would always be reading the story of the last days of Madhavendra Puri and chanting the verse that Madhavendra Puri was speaking at the time of his passing from this world. And so this is a very, very poignant story of, this is important, especially for all the new initiates, I think. So this is about the two disciples, the what would be called sar, or useful, and asar, useless disciples of the great Madhavendra Puri. So it says here, Ramachandra Puri was another of Madhavendra Puri's initiated disciples, but because of his arrogance, he was bereft of his guru's grace. Krishnadas Kaviraj has described the incident with great beauty in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as follows. Previously, when Madhavendra Puri was on his deathbed, Ramachandra Puri came to see him. Madhavendra Puri was singing the names of the Lord and crying out, I have not attained Mathura, the place of Krishna. Ramachandra then began to instruct him, so arrogant, he began to instruct his imminent guru. He had no compunction about doing so, even though he was a disciple. He said, remember that you are completely full of the bliss of Brahman. Why are you crying despite being knowledgeable of your own Brahman nature? So this, for anyone who's new to this community, this is the difference between bhakti and those who worship in an impersonal way. The devotees' hearts, when the full moon rises like tonight, the devotees' hearts become wild with love of Krishna, not peaceful in Brahman. When Madhavendra Puri heard this, he became angry and began to rebuke Ramachandra, saying, get away, you most sinful rascal. I'm dying from the distress of not having received Krishna's mercy, of not having attained Mathura, the place of Krishna, and you come to add to my misery. In other words, he was feeling separation from Krishna, which is considered the highest state of love of Krishna, even superior to love in union with Krishna. So he's in this mood of separation, and his arrogant disciple is instructing him. He says, go wherever you like, but don't show your face to me again. If I see you while I am dying, I will take a lower birth. I am dying from the distress of not having attained Krishna, and this lowly fool is teaching me about Brahman. And then a little later it says, this is quoting from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he says, even though Ramachandra Puri saw his own guru suffering of separation from Krishna, he was incapable of recognizing the transcendental nature of this transport of emotions. He judged his guru to be an ordinary man and took his mood to be mundane. the result of some material insufficiency. As a result, he tried to explain to him the value of experiencing the oneness of Brahman. Madhavendra Puri reacted to his disciple's stupidity and disregard for his instructions, and thus stopped wishing for his welfare. Wow. You don't want your guru to stop wishing for your welfare, right? He abandoned him and drove him away. So what about Shivananda Sen? He's hanging with a dog. Wow, you know, that's a little, in Indian culture, that's a little unusual, right? Nityananda we mentioned. So what about today in ISKCON? So we're kind of segueing into the present day, right? What about today in ISKCON? Actually, there are many different, unique, realized devotees who are serving in innovative and out-of-the-box ways, offering their own sacred individuality. And when we see through the eyes of the broad-minded Mahatmas, broad-minded Mahajans, we have to know not to criticize, not to judge through my own small little lens, my own myopic tiny brain, right? My teeny tiny brain that's just mired in pride and arrogance and thinking that everyone should do everything just like I do it, right? Because I'm the center, and so therefore I'm the compass for everything in the world, so everyone should do it just like me. We're also celebrating this year the 100th anniversary of the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. Was just a few days ago at the end of August. And he said something very instructive. He said that the two great enemies of progress are shallow critics and party spirit. By party spirit, it's sort of like an Indian kind of phrase. It means sectarianism. These are the two great enemies of progress, sectarianism and shallow critics. So kind of circling back to the title of what I want to be talking about today. So the title of this talk is A Sense of Entitlement. And where that came from was Rajalila Devi Dasi spent time with Yamuna Devi. Radhana Swami spent time with her during the last days. And she expressed that the biggest problem in ISKCON, in her opinion, is that devotees tend to have a sense of entitlement. So what does that mean? A sense of entitlement. She said that it's like a disease that we can carry. So we have to be very, very careful that within our institution, there is a chance of catching this disease, right? So what? Anybody have any sense? Anybody want to say? What do you think that means? A sense of entitlement. Anybody have any thoughts? Yes, Madhvacharya Prabhu, my most esteemed god brother from Washington. Can you bring the mic? Oh.
A feeling that I am worthy of service and deserve to be served.
Right, very good. Anybody else have a thought on that? I'm worthy of service, I deserve to be served. Is that what you say? Yes, Yashoda Dilal Prabhu. You want to take this one?
Could be either I've spent X number of years doing service, or I have done so much for the institution, or I am doing so much for the institution or for, you know, people in general. My service is so big, therefore I'm entitled to this, that, or the other.
Right. Very good. Thank you so much. Yeah, I have to admit that, I mean, sadly, I'm embarrassed to say, but I've been guilty of this myself, you know, thinking that I'm senior, I'm a fired up preacher, I know what Srila Prabhupada wants. So, you know, even though maybe I haven't walked a mile in, as the Native American people would say, you know, if you haven't walked a mile in their moccasins, right? So even though I didn't understand the pain or the struggles, or maybe the gifts, or how pleasing that person had been to Srila Prabhupada. I'm going to give my, you know, my thoughts on your life, and it's a very, we're walking on very delicate ice. So I would say, unless we haven't, if we haven't walked a mile in that person's chappals or Crocs or moccasins, right? Be very, very careful. Sometimes I think we misunderstand the idea of Vaishnav etiquette. You know, Vaishnav etiquette is a very, very beautiful thing. We should serve the other devotees. But sometimes I think we totally turn it on its head and think, that means I should be served. And wait, why is that person getting the ghee lamp before me when I was initiated 3 days before her? You know, it becomes absurd, you know? And I mean, I want to tell you a couple of stories. You know, everyone should respect me. I'm a senior devotee. I collected so many millions and thousands of dollars for this movement. Or, you know, just being blinded by pride when we're forgetting our real identity of servant, of the servant, of the servant. I'm going to tell you two stories that you maybe won't believe, just to tell you, to give you hope. I started this class by saying there's reasons for hope, reasons for great hope. We've come a long way. Sarah and I were just talking about how sometimes when you're up in an airplane, you don't realize we've just climbed 30,000 feet in the last 10 minutes. So I'm going to tell you these two stories. When my husband was a new devotee, and you won't even believe this, he was a new devotee. I won't tell you where. Some people in this room know. He was a new devotee, and the temple president came into the prasadam room and said to the devotees who were sitting there taking prasadam, he said, "You don't you know who I am? I'm your temple president. You didn't save me the maha prasadam? What's wrong with you people?" I mean, and that's a real story. So just, you know, they were all just so bewildered at the sense of entitlement of this person, you know. And there's another funny story that this is a person, I was in another temple, I was in French Canada, in a temple, and there was a devotee who, he was a brahmachari at the time, he actually later took sannyas, and now I don't know where he is, he's not around anymore, but he used to, we would go on Harinam Sankirtan, and he would say to the people on the street on Harinam, he was French, and he would say, "Perhaps you have been to our temple and you have seen me jump. You know? Like they're supposed to come to the temple to see you dance? That's why they should come to the temple? These are real stories. So doesn't it give you hope that, wow, we've come a long way, baby, right? You know, it's come a long way. So we get blinded by our pride. I'll tell you another story. There was one devotee in the UK who was, he was a father. He had a little daughter who died at a very young age. And, he and his wife were grieving over the loss of their daughter. And the devotees were coming to him, coming to their apartment and you know, preaching to them that, oh, you know, you're not this body. She wasn't her body and you should just tolerate and this kind of preaching. And he was telling us, this was some months later, that he really felt that they were lacking in compassion and that they were only speaking to their own need to validate themselves as big preachers. They weren't really showing compassion to these devotees. They weren't showing compassion to this couple who lost their child. I was thinking also, so the story Radhana Swami was telling earlier about Sanatan Goswami, I mean, imagine how learned he was. He was like, you know, like the Secretary of State, plus a billionaire, plus he knew, you know, so many languages, plus, you know, from a Saraswat Brahmin family, like the most elevated, high caste Brahmin family, and somehow he'd been pressed into the service of this Nawab king. And so he comes to Lord Chaitanya, he and Rupa Goswami, his wonderful brother, you know. And they're saying to Lord Chaitanya when they meet him at Ramakeli, "Kayami, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I am. People call me Pandit, but I don't know who I am. I'm such a fool." This is what he was saying. So just imagine, I mean, would we be reading and talking about Sanatan Goswami 500 years later today if he had said to Lord Chaitanya, "You don't know who I am"? Can you imagine if he'd said that? "You don't know who I am." You know, I mean, just imagine. But we hear this kind of thing, you know, sometimes. Well, there's one poet who said something very beautiful, that for so many millions of years, the sun has been shining down on the earth. But even after all that time of shining down, the sun never says to the earth, "You owe me." Right? "You owe me." So he says, with that kind of love can light up the whole world. That kind of love can light up the whole world. So imagine if we could love like that in such a selfless way, as the servant of the servant of the servant, unceasing love, unmotivated love. Imagine how different our culture would be. So I want to ask all of you, why did you come to Krishna consciousness? Anybody want to venture forth and answer? Why did you come to Krishna consciousness? We have quiet ladies. We have a whole front row of ladies, but they're very quiet. So Mulika, Jana, Shama, Jana. Why don't we get an answer from them, and then we can pass the mic back. Well, you were born into it. You don't have a choice. It's a little bit of... I didn't have a choice.
Speaking? I was thinking for a second. For me, I remember always, like, thinking, like, my parents would fight a lot. And I was trying to understand, well, why do people who say they love each other, trying to understand like human psychology. So I went to the university to understand that. And it gave me some insight into human nature, but it didn't answer more questions and deeper questions that I actually at that time didn't even really know that I had. Wow. So then I thought, well, I was raised Catholic and I'm gonna become a nun. And I remember walking into the Baltimore Temple and I was kind of academically inclined, but the first thing was someone gave me a plate of halva. And I thought, and they were sitting around drinking hot milk, and I thought, who drinks hot milk except for babies? You know, that was like, it was just the culture, but they were so kind to me.
Wow.
It was such the devotees that I met, and it was probably, I'll never to this day, I remember how kind they were to me, and I had not met people like that.
Beautiful. So, as Radhana Swami was saying earlier, you know, sometimes we think it's the philosophy, but it's the kindness of the devotees. Right? Yeah, and the halava.
And the halava, and I would like to say it was the philosophy at first,
because
I was really academically inclined at the time. And then gradually, but mostly because of the kindness,
beautiful,
I began to read the books and read the philosophy, beautiful, and understand.
Beautiful. Someone had an answer over there, yes.
Krishna Mohan Prabhu, can you turn that mic on, please? Sorry.
Good. And you found very good. So you found some answers. Very nice.
Come. For many years now, winter has been really wicked for us, so we couldn't go much. But I have learned a lot from that temple.
Beautiful.
And I have been looking for a guru for many years, and I just couldn't find one. It just didn't come to me. When I was in that temple, I was talking to one of the devotees, and I said, you know, Prabhu, I need a guru. I need someone who guides me. Where am I going? And the Prabhu said that, you know, Mataji, Guruji will come to you. I am so pleased and so fortunate to meet Radhanath Swami today.
Beautiful.
It just made my entire life's desire.
Yes.
And I'm hearing this beautiful
One who considers himself, herself, to be the servant of the servant of the servant. That's the person who is qualified to be guru, right? Yeah.
And I have found that being with Krishna consciousness.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So yeah, so I'm asking, why did you come to Krishna consciousness? You know, when we look in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, do you want to live there? You know, do you want to live in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and have those? Yes, good. That's the right answer. You want to have those kinds of exchanges, those deep, profound, loving exchanges, as described in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, personally, I want to live in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And sometimes, quite honestly, I see a gap between our life in the ISKCON society and the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And what is that gap? That gap is this sense of entitlement. That gap is our arrogance, our pride, where we think, oh, I should be served. I'm not the servant of the servant, but actually I should be served. That's the gap. So we want to close this gap, live in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I would say to be illuminated by the many facets of this jewel of Sadhu Sangha, that there are many, just like a jewel can flash in so many different colors. So many diverse colors, so many diverse waves of serving, so many diverse realizations and beautiful understandings, even that sometimes someone might consider to be eccentric, but it makes it all more and more wonderful, right? Like I heard once that when we love someone, what we love is their eccentricities. Does that make sense to you? When we love someone, thank you so much. When we love someone, what we love is their eccentricities, those things that make them different from everybody else. You know, if we can be illuminated by that kind of love, we can exist in a society of unity and diversity. Another phrase that Radhanath Swami uses a lot, unity and diversity. In other words, I can love you and respect you even though you're so different from me, even though you don't think the same way, you don't serve the same way. I can be enriched by hearing your realizations and seeing the service that you do. Yes, so Lord Chaitanya says to where this verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, the third verse of the Sikshastakam prayers, if you don't know it, find it, memorize it. One should be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a humble state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. So why does it say that? Because if we're not humble, then I don't really have to chant. I chant sometimes. But I don't really have to chant if we're not humble. But if we're humble, our hearts will be breaking with humility and longing to become the servant of Lord Chaitanya, the servant of the servant of Lord Chaitanya. So yes, Lord Chaitanya says, wear that verse around your neck on a necklace strung on the holy name. Wear it always around your neck. And in that way, we can demonstrate our love for Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said, you can demonstrate your love for me by how you cooperate together. Cooperate, that's like cooperate is like a metaphor for bhakti, to cooperate. That's to cooperate with Krishna's plan. That is bhakti, that's Krishna consciousness. To just try to cooperate, that's bhakti. Try to cooperate with Krishna's plan, with the plans of the gurus and the society and all the wonderful devotees serving. Once Srila Prabhupada said something really amazing. I was mentioning this the other day in New York. He said that if you have no bhava, no ecstatic love, then your deity worship is only idol worship. Imagine that. Most extreme statement by Srila Prabhupada. So, do we want to be idol worshippers, to be dead in our worship? Do we want to just be worshiping idols of our own pride, our own conceit, arrogance, and concocted sectarianism? Do we want to be worshiping those idols? Or do we want to actually be alive in Krishna consciousness, be alive in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or be dying in a culture of dry, judgmental neophyte interactions? Personally, I don't want to live like that. I didn't come to Krishna consciousness for that. I don't think you guys did either. Am I right? Yeah. So there's a beautiful lecture Srila Prabhupada gave in Vrindavan. What had happened was someone had offered the deities some dead flowers. So the deities in Vrindavan, India, were wearing these dead garlands when Prabhupada came for darshan. And he gave this most amazing lecture. If you can find it, find it. He's using this word burden, galagraha. And he's saying that if I have no bhava, if I have no love, no ecstatic love, then I will think, why do I have to get some nice flowers? Any old rotten flower will do. You know, this the guru, my guru, this, all you new initiates, you know, should perk up at this. And the old initiates too, and the before initiates. So my guru has given me such a burden. He's given me such a burden. Why do I have to offer some nice flowers? Any old rotten flowers will do. And so Prabhupada said, if you think in this way, then this worship will be a burden for you always. And this Haribol will be finished. So very, very heavy lecture. So this is kind of Prabhupada's talking about idol worship. When we just see Krishna, we don't see him as Krishna. We just think it's just an idol. It's all our concocted imagination. So yeah, so this is neophyte religion. This is Kanista Prakrita religion. I don't think we want to live in a culture like this. So we have to work to uplift the ISKCON society, all of us together, to make sure that we're not living in a culture of arrogance, conceit, judgmentalism, and pride. One teacher said that sometimes neophyte religion becomes an excuse for keeping God a stranger. Isn't that a powerful statement? Yeah, it can be an excuse for keeping God a stranger. In other words, I don't really want to love you. I don't really want to know you. Just keep your distance. You can stay there on the altar. Or sometimes like, okay, God's in your heart, and I don't want him to come out. Don't say anything. I don't want to talk to him, and I don't want to have any interaction with the deities. Right? So this is all about neophyte religion. So I believe that we would be more happy living in the ISKCON society if we could all work together to uplift our society, to come to a point of being at least to the Madhyam platform. Madhyam, what are the symptoms of a... Well, first, let me describe. What are the symptoms of a neophyte, Kanista, Prakrita, materialistic level of worship? The symptoms are that we worship the deity, but we... just in an external way. Or sometimes some people might say, oh, I don't even need to go to the temple. God's everywhere. That's another type of neophyte understanding. Some people think, well, God's only in the temple. Some people think, well, God's everywhere. I don't need to go to the temple. But then also the idea of not knowing how to behave to the devotees. That's a quality. Seeing God in the deity or so-called everywhere, but not knowing how to behave, how to treat the devotees respectfully. And also not having compassion for the people in general. This is all neophyte materialistic religion, sectarianism. So then this word madhyama, adhikari, madhyama. Adhikari means actually the eligibility. So this madhyama adhikari is first kanista adhikari, then madhyama adhikari. Someone who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the highest object of my love, who makes friends with the Lord's devotees, respects and honors and makes friends with the devotees, who is always merciful to the people in general, and who just avoids the people who are envious. No need to get into a fight. You know, just say, Haribo. You know, just no need to fight, right? But then the Uttama Adhikari, the person on the highest level, which is what we read when we read the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Uttama Adhikari is never interested in blaspheming others, even if they preach in a different way from the way I preach or my guru preaches. That's all sectarianism, right? My guru preaches in a certain way, but there's space for everyone to do it in a different way. This is unity and diversity. So one's heart is clean and pure. They've realized unalloyed Krishna consciousness with no ulterior motive and no cessation of love and service and chanting. Their hearts are full of taste for the holy names. So there's a phrase, Namaruchi Jive Doya Bhagavat Shravan. These are the activities of an Uttama Adhikari, that taste for the holy name and mercy to the all jivas, all living beings, and then always trying to be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing and teaching Srimad Bhagavatam, and always giving Krishna to others, giving compassion, and having a mature determination in Krishna consciousness. So this sense of superiority, this sense of entitlement, is very counterproductive. And sometimes we even have that toward people in other religions, right? We think, oh, we have the absolute truth, and you know, they don't really have it in the same way. There's a very beautiful story of Saint Francis that he was so troubled by the fighting of the Christians during the time of the Crusades that he decided that he was going to go and speak to the Sultan in this place where the fighting was, you know, at its peak. And he went, he was prepared to become a martyr, he was prepared to be killed for this, but he went with one of his brothers just to speak, not even with the intention of conversion, but just to speak with this Sultan. And the Sultan's guards, he went unarmed, he didn't have any weapons, he didn't have anything, he was completely just going as a messenger of peace. And the Sultan's guards saw that these were Christian holy people, and they just let them in, and he came in, he spoke to the Sultan, and they had an amazing, what's considered one of the first world's first interfaith dialogues, Saint Francis and the Sultan, and they admired each other so much. Neither one converted to the other's religion, but they respected each other so much. And as a matter of fact, after that, the Franciscan brothers were given the ownership or the maintenance of the church at Bethlehem. So for centuries, the brothers of St. Francis have maintained this church, which was in the Muslim territory, and the Muslim people, out of respect for them, gave them this church, which was at the place where Jesus was appeared. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, again coming back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Chaitanya Sikshamrita, he has a very beautiful quote in this regard, where he says something like, when I see my beloved Krishna being worshipped in a way by other people, being worshipped in a way that's not familiar to me, I become inspired, because even though their worship is unfamiliar to me, I feel inspired seeing that they're worshipping my Lord in their own way with their own words. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, it's so inspiring. It's so broad-minded. So these are our acharyas. This is the type of thinking that we need to pattern after. So we're talking about this false sense of entitlement, which is a sectarian consciousness. Sometimes you see devotees or hear devotees you hear unbecoming comments. You hear devotees say something that is not the type of thing that a devotee should say, like derisive comments about other ethnic groups. You know, like, oh, these Muslims are all this, or, you know, these Jews are this, or these Christians are this, or these this, that, the other thing, you know. These Indians are all like this, these Americans, these women, the Jews, the black people, you know, they're all like this. This is so unbecoming. No devotee should ever speak like this. We should never have to hear this among our society. So unbecoming. And it's like the tip of an iceberg of a sectarian, mundane, racist consciousness. We have to get rid of this kind of consciousness from our society. And when we look at our history in Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole Kali Yuga began with the arrogant son of a Brahmin, this Sringi, who thought he knew. You know, I know the way it's supposed to be. He thought, I know, and I can judge by myself. I don't have to consult with anyone. I'm going to take an independent action. And he brought down the whole culture. You can look it up in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says in one of his lectures that the age of Kali personified, was looking for a way to start the age of hypocrisy and the iron age of hypocrisy. And so he had to create a conspiracy. So he created this conspiracy through this arrogant son of the Brahmin, Sringi, who took independent, arrogant action, conceited, proud action. So we don't want to be like that. We don't want to be part of this conspiracy of Kali Yuga. We want to usher in the golden age of the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita, when all the devotees are dancing. You know, the untouchables are all dancing with the Brahmins, people of every color, people of every caste, people of every culture. This is what we want. We want to be a part of this. To dwell in humility, to chant incessantly, to wear this verse around our neck, Trinadipi Sunichena, and to be guided by the advice of holy sadhus and saintly people. In the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj describes how he was asked to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he doesn't immediately grab his pen, but he seeks blessings. He goes everywhere. He seeks counsel. He seeks blessings. He wants to be guided by the advice of the sadhus, by the shastra, by the gurus. And finally he goes to the Madan Mohan deity, who was worshipped by Srila Sanatana Goswami, and the deity, the garland of the deity, fell down on him. So he sought blessings. This is the way that that we should conduct our lives. Always seek counsel. Like, I know in Chaupati there's a counselor system. This is a very, very good thing we should really try to institute. So wherever you are, if you have some god brother or god sister that you respect, that try to have a mentoring relationship with someone, because it's very, very helpful. You know, sometimes your guru may be in India or inaccessible, but there are always devotees that you can respect and take counsel from, take guidance from. This is very prominent in the Catholic Church. All the greatest saints, they have their spiritual counselors that they would consult on spiritual matters. Very, very important for us. So bhakti, this path of bhakti is actually a practice of gratitude. You've heard of the attitude of gratitude. There's a book, Attitudes of Gratitude. We should all have an attitude of gratitude. But it's actually not enough. Bhakti is the practice of gratitude. Just like, you might have an attitude of yoga. Maybe you have an attitude of mindfulness. You believe in yoga. Maybe you have a yoga outfit, but you don't really do yoga. You know, the outfit hangs in the closet. You know, so we have to actually have a practice of bhakti, and we have to practice it every day, practicing gratitude, practicing appreciation, voice it, you know, walk our talk. We have to actually practice gratitude. When someone's serving prasadam, thank them. They're sweeping the hall, thank them. You know, really, and not just lip service, but really mean it. Srila Prabhupada was... there's a really nice, that's coming later. So the Panchatattva, so this practice of gratitude, this practice of appreciation, of humility, this is the antidote. So if a sense of entitlement is a disease in our society or a possibility of a disease in our society, then this practice of gratitude, appreciation, humility, this is the antidote to this false sense of entitlement. And the Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya and his associates, it's described that they broke open the storehouse of love of God, and they gave it to everyone. They made it accessible to everyone. All of us, I mean, what access do we really have? No access. We just come from backgrounds. Even if we're from India, pretty much we've forgotten the whole thing, right? So they opened the storehouse, broke it open, and they just wanted to give it to all the people who were not actually qualified, give access to all, and even to those who had run away to the Western countries. They wanted to give access to the arrogant scholars, to the impersonalists, to the, all those who are running away from the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. So I've been talking through this class about this false sense of entitlement. But now I want to talk a little bit, as we're wrapping things up, about an authentic sense of entitlement. What is that? So every morning when we have our Tulsi worship in our temple program, we're praying to Tulsi for the adhikar, the right, the eligibility. Please give me seva adhikar. You know that verse? Seva adhikara diye kora nija dasi. Yeah, so please give me the right. Let me be eligible. make me eligible. There's one lecture where Srila Prabhupada says, we are hearing so much, preach, 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 but they do not know. One must be empowered to preach. It's really something, you know? So yeah, give me this eligibility. Give me this authentic entitlement. Give me the right to enter Sri Vrindavan. Give me the qualification to enter into the service of Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna. There's an amazing story of Srila Prabhupada in all humility. He wasn't doing this publicly. Actually, I'll tell you two stories. So Srila Prabhupada, when he was living at the Radha Damodar temple before he came to the West, he was a very eminent scholar. The top men and scholars and devotees, mahants of the different temples, would visit him in his room there at Radha Damodar. He was a very respected, learned scholar and gentleman of Vrindavan. But at night, he would be sweeping the courtyard of the Radha Damodar temple in the most anonymous way. So this story was told by a Babaji who was living next door. His name was Hridayananda Das Babaji. And he lived next door to the Radha Damodar temple, and he would be sleeping at night, and he would hear someone crying at night. But it was night, and he was asleep, and he would think, who is that? What is that? And then he would just go back to sleep. But one night, it was a full moon night like tonight. And so he couldn't really sleep. The moon was out. And so he decided he'd go up to the roof to see, find out who that was. And so he went up to the roof, and he saw it was this great Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami who was sweeping, and he was crying while he was sweeping. And he was saying, hey, Rupa, hey, Sanatan, hey, Gurudev, please give me your mercy. I cannot execute the orders of my Guru Maharaj without your mercy. Please give me your mercy. So Srila Prabhupada was praying to the Acharyas, to his Guru, for this authentic adhikar, this empowerment, this entitlement, to be able to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya. There's sort of a funny parallel story that happened in Vrindavan, where there was one of our godbrothers who would, after Prabhupada was coming back from his walk, he would always be standing there and saying all these kind of verbose kind of prayers. Oh, Prabhupada, you're the greatest, you know, you're the Petite Pavana. And Prabhupada once said to him, well, why don't you do something practical? Why don't you do some practical service? Then, you know, talk about arrogance. So the next day, Prabhupada came back from his walk, and this young man is, you know, sweeping right in front of Prabhupada, so Prabhupada could see that he's sweeping. So, you know, just contrast that with Srila Prabhupada's anonymous, in the middle of the night, crying out to his Guru Maharaj and the previous Acharyas. So, Raghunath Das Goswami, he tried to get the shelter of Lord Chaitanya so many times, and he kept getting sent back to his affluent family. And finally, when he took shelter of Lord Nityananda, he was able to get the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. So we should always remember this. If you want the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, if you want the service of Lord Chaitanya, pray to Lord Nityananda. Approach Lord Nityananda, beg for his blessings. And then once Prabhupada said, and if you want the blessings of Lord Nityananda, beg for the mercy of Jagai and Madhai. In other words, give mercy to all living beings. Give the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to all living beings. You said a quarter to six we're supposed to end?
Six.
Six, okay. There's a very nice story of Devananda Pandit that I wanted to tell you. Devananda Pandit was what's called a mumukshu. He was interested in liberation. He would read Srimad Bhagavatam. He was very wise and learned, but he had not reached the conclusion of devotional service. He was not interested in Krishna bhakti. And he would always be reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, there are classifications of the four types of neophyte devotees, one of them being a wise man. So he was wise, but he was not a devotee. Sometimes in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes in one place that some wise people in the Shantaras, they're not attached to Bhakti Bhajan, they're not attached to worship of Krishna, they're not against it, but they're not attached to it, they're just in Shanti, peace. So he was like that. And so even though he was reading Srimad Bhagavatam, it was without the conclusion of devotional service. So he he was reading, and he what happened was Shivas, the great Shivas Thakur, came into the assembly, and he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and he began to cry. He was so moved by hearing the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam that he began to cry and weep. And what happened was Devananda Pandit's ignorant disciples, who were impersonal in their understanding, they had no understanding of Krishna Bhakti, they just took Srivast Thakur and threw him out. You know, what a trouble, you know, what a nuisance this person is. They just threw him out. So that was an offense, right? So then what happened was he didn't stop them, so it became his offense also. So let's hear what happens next. So then Devananda Pandit did not object to the action of his students, his disciples. He was responsible for their offense to a devotee. Mahaprabhu was thus angry at him. The Lord said, "Whoever recites the Bhagavatam without glorifying devotional service is an ignorant fool who knows nothing. This rascal recites the Bhagavatam and never mentions bhakti. I will go and tear up his manuscript. Just watch me." Lord Chaitanya was going to tear up his Bhagavatam. And then it says, sometime after Devananda Pandit committed this offense to Srivas Pandit, Mahaprabhu passed nearby his house and saw that he was engaged in giving a discourse on the Bhagavatam. He became angry and rebuked him severely for his lack of faith in the Vaishnavas. Just as blasphemy of the devotees is the best way to be deprived of the Lord's mercy and destined for downfall, glorifying them and engaging in their service is the best way to find the mercy of the Lord and become freed from all sinful activities. So here's a quote from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It says, "Listen, Brahman, if you want to be cured after consuming poison, you must ingest ambrosia." We're talking about the poison of this sense of entitlement, right? "You must ingest the ambrosia through the very same mouth that you took the poison. In this way, not only will the poison be digested, but your body will become immortal through the ambrosia's divine power." So through great good fortune, Mahaprabhu's dear associate, this is the second chapter of the story, right? So Mahaprabhu's dear associate, Vakreshwar Pandit, came to stay at Devananda Pandit's house. Because Devananda took excellent care of Vakreshwar Pandit, Mahaprabhu softened toward him. Previously, Devananda had been completely without any faith in the Lord, but when he heard of Mahaprabhu's glories from Vakreshwar, his attitude changed. Through the association of the Lord's devotee, he began to develop a faith in Lord Chaitanya. By the grace of Vakreshwar Pandit, his faulty intelligence was wiped away and he became a believer in Lord Gaurishankar. Nice, huh? So, what about this authentic sense of entitlement? There's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, 25th chapter, 36th verse, for those of you who like verse references. It says that the pure devotee who is charmed, we have to become charmed, right? Charmed by seeing, this is Krishna speaking, by seeing my different forms, despite his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. So this is the entitlement that comes from selflessly serving, causelessly loving Krishna and the devotees. And then the final verse that's so famous for all of us from the 10th canto that says, "Tat tenu kampam susumikshamano." This is another verse that should be memorized, a pivotal verse that says that just by going on chanting, just by going on serving and tolerating the difficulties of this world, always within the core of one's heart, offering obeisances to the Lord throughout the course of one's life. By doing this, what happens is one becomes, it says that the kingdom of God becomes her or his rightful claim, just like a son in time inherits the property of the father. It's a wonderful, wonderful verse about this rightful, authentic entitlement. So if we can give up arrogance, pride, false sense of entitlement, then Krishna will open his storehouse of rasa for us. And I wanted to close, we have maybe a little time for questions, but I wanted to close with this one paragraph from the closing verses of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Chaitanya Sikshamrita, where he talks about after cultivating sadhana bhakti or bhakti in practice, the devotee then attains the stage of bhava or ecstatic love, and finally prema, the ultimate full perfection of love. And then it says, this is so beautiful, then the sweet and majestic Lord, the abode of Lakshmi, opens his storehouse of rasa, loving relationship, sweet, tasty relationship, and says to the devotee, oh friend, listen carefully to this, this is really, really nice. Oh friend, I have been carefully holding this storehouse for you. You alone have rights to it. Rejecting me, you fell under the spell of the energy of illusion. Continuously, I have shown great regard for you. As you have attained this by your own efforts, I am extremely pleased. Serve my ever-fresh, pleasurable form and play with me in the endless ocean of bliss. Do not fear, do not lament, for you have attained eternal life of bliss. For my sake, you have cut all chains of material attachment. I will not be able to repay the debt of love you have shown. Be naturally satisfied in your service. So nice, huh? So just like Krishna said to the gopis, I can't repay you. You've defeated me. So he says that even just to such a devotee. You've defeated me. You know, your love has to be its own reward. So thank you very much. These are some thoughts on a false sense of entitlement and a true sense of entitlement. I think we have maybe a couple minutes for questions if somebody has some questions or thoughts or realizations or corrections or anything. Yes. Well, wait, let's see. You had a chance before. Let's see if there's somebody else who has. Did you have your hand up? Yes. Okay. What's your name? Jai. Haribo, Chai.
Thank you so much. Yes, I did have a chance in the morning, and I'm grateful I get a chance again.
Okay.
I have a question around compassion and empathy. What I personally struggle with is when I see a deviation of some kind, whether it's minor, major, something, whatever, I don't know how to be compassionate and empathic to that devotee, because ultimately it's a devotee and the devotee is struggling, and you know, how can I be loving in that moment, and what is blocking me from being loving in that situation?
Well, just try to see from that person's point of view. You know, if it's a conflict between the two of you, try to see, this is an instruction coming from Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj actually, try to see that it's perhaps your fault first of all, and see from the other person's point of view. And we have to be careful to not be so ready to judge. There's a beautiful story that's given in some, Yashoda Dulal Prabhu and I are in the business world, so in the business world they have this one story they tell of this man who was on a subway train in New York, and he was riding to work or something, and this man, other man got on, and his kids are just running. It was early in the morning, there was nobody on the subway, and the man who just gotten on, his kids were running wild, Jai Shri Shri Radha Damodar. So the kids were running around the car, and they're acting wild and screaming, and this man is just getting so judgmental in his mind, the first man who got on. Why doesn't this man control his kids? They're making so much noise, such a disturbance. And then, you know, finally he said to the other man, sir, maybe you might get hold of your children. They're making a bit of a disturbance. And the man who'd been just lost in thought said, oh, I'm so sorry. He said, we've just come from the hospital where their mother just passed away. And I just lost my wife, and they've just lost their mother, so please forgive me. So, you know, we tend to judge from my moccasins, from my Crocs, my chapels, you know, oh, you know, this person is so wrong and so such an offender. But maybe I'm the one who's offensive. So try to give the benefit of the doubt to the other person. And, you know. think that's a good thing. And sometimes just think, well, maybe they're having a hard day. I remember once being in the Los Angeles temple and I was making Simply Wonderfuls with Vishnu Jan Swami, and some devotee came up and said some crazy thing. I don't even remember what it was that devotee said, but something. But what I do remember is that Vishnu Jan Swami said to me, oh, he must have a cloud passing through his head today. You know, it was just so kind and forgiving. You know, he's a good person, but today he just happens to have a cloud passing through his head, you know? Yes, Maluka. While we're waiting for the mic, I'll tell you one other story. The mic is going to Maluka. There's another really beautiful story about Jayananda, who was the president of the San Francisco Temple, very humble devotee, very famous for his humility and his kindness. And he was so humble, he was the temple president. He used to take out the garbage. And one new person came to the temple, and he was heard saying to someone else, wow, this is the consciousness of the garbage man. Imagine what the rest of them are like. So, Jay.
I was going to say, in response to your question, this is written in many different ways, but the gist of it is be kind to everyone we meet because we do not know what kind of challenges they're facing.
Absolutely.
I was also thinking, it's so funny that you asked that question about when you like to live in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. For some reason, that was the first book that I read, and I was so blown away by the exchanges. Is that me? That's probably me. And I was thinking that I wanted those kinds of exchanges. And the third thing I wanted to say is, just like you're asking a question in class, something that you brought up, find those people that you can talk to with your doubts, with your concerns, someone that you can trust that you know will be confidential, like you were saying. Because for me, sometimes someone will say, oh my gosh, you've been like around for so long. You know, and I say, but by the grace of God, that's something that is a Christian saying. But for me, it has been those times that I've had doubts, I've had concerns, I've been agitated, someone offended me, whatever, I was able to go to different God sisters and God brothers, and voice those concerns. And it wasn't like I was judging someone, it was like I was, it might have been even, no, it might have been that I was judging someone, but I needed to be able to go to get another perspective.
That's nice.
And I feel that that's what's kept me in devotional service.
That's consulting with community, consulting with senior people. And yeah, you know, people should come to the Krishna consciousness movement and look at Krishna and see the deities and think, this is a place where I can lay down my defenses, I can put down my weapons, I can be vulnerable and be loved by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is a community of people, the devotees of Krishna, that this is a place where I can be loved for who I am. We have a psychiatrist in the audience here, and I know there's a famous quote from Sigmund Freud where he said, what do women really want? And he... he had no answer, right? But I can tell you, all you men in the room, and women, you know, what women really want and what men really want when we go to our inner heart. We want to be loved. We want to give love and be loved for who we really are, without the masks, without the games, you know, to be vulnerable. And that should be, we should be this kind of a community where we won't be judged by opening our hearts, where people can trust and be disarmed and be charmed by charming Krishna and his charming, disarming devotees. Jai. Thank you very much.
Wow.
I'm Rukmini Prabhu. Rukmini Prabhu, I really like Gauravani, but I am so happy that you're here.
So this is the effect that Rukmini has on people when she speaks, whether it's in class or in person. When she's at the Bhakti Center probably every couple of months, and you know, we always have her give a talk if it fits her schedule, and it's always the most eagerly anticipated talk in that time frame. So I don't think that applause was enough, so let's give her one more round of applause. So, remember I said in the morning what's common between a nuclear engineer and a human resource? Remember I said in the morning what's common between a nuclear engineer and a human resources professional from South Africa and his farm in Pennsylvania? Well, we're about to find out after dinner tonight. We will have a wonderful presentation by that nuclear engineer and by that HR professional, because they actually live here at Gita Nagari, and you probably have seen them around, especially the nuclear engineer. He drives around in really tattered clothes and driving a tattered van and you know, doing like the most menial services, milking the cows, fixing the toilets. His name is Dhruva, and his wife, Parijata Devi, you know, so. And to be honest, you know, and I try to be really objective about this, knowing some people who know me know how partial I am to Gita Nagari, and so therefore there might be some tint of lack of objectivity there. But this is a very special place. So these are two special people who represent a whole lot of special people in Gita Nagari. So this is a place with where people have big hearts, and you know, it's a place where you'll be charmed. So, you know, find some people who live here and work here and try to get to know them before you go home tomorrow. And I will guarantee you, you will want to come back and spend some time here with them, assist them in whatever ways you can, because they really have hearts that are bigger than this property, which is 400 acres. So, you know, Gita Nagari, there are so many devotees, and I'm, you know, I'm obviously not going to list all of them who helped to put this festival together. But I do want to mention a few, and I'll start with Krishna Mohan Prabhu, who is our sound engineer in the back. Really, really important job, thankless job in many ways. He's here first thing in the morning, way before any of us are here, and he's here last thing after we've all gone, because he still has to finish, you know, doing whatever work he has to do. So Krishna Mohan Prabhu, thank you for such a great seva. Let's not forget the people who've been serving out prasad and the cooks who've helped feed us and who are helping to feed us. So a round of applause for them. And many of the folks, you know, you have interacted with, the people out front in the registration booth, and you know, the other folks who've been helping, you know, park your car and directing you to places. So, you know, a round of applause for those folks as well. So Radhanath Swami should be here. Actually, he's probably here. I see Anantadev, so he's probably, Maharaj, oh, Maharaj is already here. Okay, so Radhanath Swami is next. And after Maharaj speaks, we will have dinner prasad, and then we will have the presentation out at the festival site, which is by the yoga studio. So there'll be a small presentation, about 15 or 20 minutes, and then there'll be a nighttime kirtan out in the open. And then tomorrow morning, we start at 4:30 with Mangal Aarti, and 7 a.m. Chaitanya Charitamrita class will be given by His Holiness Devamrit Swami, who's arrived today. With that, yes.
So we also want to share with you that a Chitta Gopi and Ananda are here. They came specifically to be with us this evening with His Holiness Radhanath Swami.
Oh, Jai. Ananta Govinda and Achyuta Gopi Prabhus from New York. Many of you who have participated in the kirtans know how fantastic the kirtans are. They came specifically to spend an evening with us, and hopefully they'll be chanting, leading some kirtan tonight along with other devotees in the evening. With that, I'd like to invite His Holiness Radhanath Swami to come up and speak to us again.